Attention entrepreneurs and business owners. It's time to stop working so hard, start working smart, and build a business that stands on its own.
Generate real wealth, real freedom,
and a real legacy.
Now from New York City, small business champion and business attorney, helping thousands of entrepreneurs generate hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's Nina Kaufman, and this is the Cash Out Big Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Cash Out Big, where we're sharing the tools to double the value of your service business and build a company that generates real wealth, real freedom, and a real legacy. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. Well, I'm real happy today because I found a way to take a mini vacation for a minute at a time. How did I do it? Well, I took one of the photos that I took when I was in Monument Valley recently. And if you remember, it's just an extraordinary place, hard to get to, but so incredible in terms of the vastness of the horizon. I mean, there are no skyscrapers in the way, no trees, no nothing. It is flat. It is open. And don't even get me started on the night sky where there are just billions of stars, and I was able to see the Milky Way arcing across the horizon. So one of the things I did is, I took one of the photos, I made it my computer desktop, and now when things start to get really crazy, because they do when you come back from vacation, don't they? The emails are going, and all of a sudden everybody needs you to fight fires and jump right back into it, and it's almost like you never left. I can take a minute out and just breathe, and remember the calm and the peace that I felt there. You know, and that's something that our guest today touches on as well, because he was really frenzied in his business, trying to make up for all the craziness that was happening around the recession in 2008. And in that frenzy, he was making decisions that really weren't helpful for the business and almost blew it up entirely. So you'll hear him talking about taking a step back and learning to slow down. Now, our guest today has some great tips on how he learned to slow down and put better systems in his business so he could also get off that hamster wheel. So make sure you're signed up for the executive summary so that you can not only get his tips, but get the top tips every week from the podcast episodes that we have. So go to businessexponential.com and get signed up. And now for our guest, Neil Christensen. Neil is the founder and CEO of a company called Email Splat, which helps other business owners generate leads and close sales by using email automation. But as he and I had also discussed months ago when I had interviewed him for a magazine article, and that's why I wanted him back on the show, he learned this not just, oh, hello, let me set up a whole new platform, but he learned this really the hard way when the recession hit his high-end remodeling business. And all of a sudden he realized, wow, holy smokes, I'm not the hotshot salesperson I thought I was. And they really didn't have solid systems to support the sales process, to educate consumers. And he saw a lot, and you'll hear in the interview how the way the customers he was reaching out to were also thinking differently and wanted different information. So by putting these systems in his business, he was able to increase his close rate by 400%. And he has a lot of other really great and very candid insights about running and growing and ultimately selling his business. So that's why we're delighted to have him here on Cash Out Big. Neil, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Great to be here, Nina.
One of the reasons I really wanted to hear more about your story is that, and we have talked previously, is that you have really gone the roller coaster in terms of having a business, getting hit, having to retool, start all over again, and then reemerging with something that's sellable. So can you tell us a little bit about that wake-up call moment?
Yeah, during my career, there's been lots of wake-up call moments, but the one you're probably specifically speaking of would be the recession, the Great Recession of 08 that slapped me around pretty good.
Slapped a lot of people around pretty good.
Yeah, it really did. And so, yeah, that was a big wake-up call because, just to give the listeners a little background, my brother and I owned a remodeling company outside Chicago that we had started in 2000. And our goal always from the day we started it was we were going to sell the business and we wanted to sell it in 10 years. We wanted to have it for 10 years and then sell. So 2010. Well, 2008 happened. And by 2010, there was absolutely nothing to sell. I mean, it was two guys barely hanging on, struggling to make it through because everything fell apart. So we pretty much had to start over a second time and build a second company. I mean, it was the same. We didn't go bankrupt or anything. It was the same name, but we really just had to rethink everything, start over. It literally went from 8 employees to 1. Revenue got cut in half almost overnight. And it was just survival at that point.
I just want to jump back because you said something really interesting, that when you started with the idea of selling. How did that get implanted in your head?
I don't know. I think we it's because, well, we started a remodeling company, and quite honestly, I never wanted to be in the remodeling business. It was never my dream. Maybe more so my brother's, because he was much more a hands-on kind of person. I was definitely interested in construction, and I've been in it up to that point. I'd pretty much been in it my whole career, but I didn't really want to be. And so we set out with the idea that we're going to build this and sell it because we don't want to do this for the rest of our lives. And at the time we started it, I was 30 and my brother was 26. And so even at that point, we knew, you know, we don't want to do this forever, but this is a good way to build a good asset and get some experience and then sell it. So I don't know what really sparked that, why we were so determined from day one. I think I just wanted to have the mindset from day one that it was really a business and not, you know, so many people start a business and it's not really a business. They say it is, but they don't really treat it that way.
Right. They made it into their own job.
Right. Exactly. And I didn't want to buy myself a job. I didn't, I had a job. I didn't need to quit that and go out and start a business that was really just a job in disguise. Yeah. So that's really what it comes down to. I wanted to treat this like a real thing. And I think we thought that if we always had the goal of selling it, we would treat it differently than if we just said, hey, let's start a business.
Mm-hmm. Great. So now I'm going to jump you forward to 2008. And what I want to hear, what I know our listeners are eager to know more about is, yeah, you started kind of picking up the pieces. What were some of the steps you implemented to put it back together and really make sure that it was a lot more sellable this time?
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing we discovered in 2008 is that we were not salespeople. We thought we were. But prior to that, you know, in the glory years of, I call them the glory years of 05, 06, all you had to do was show up, speak English, dress halfway decent, and it was your job to lose. And so what we learned in retrospect is that we were really good order takers. We were not salespeople. And so in 08, suddenly we literally had people calling up and we'd say, so how many other companies are you talking to? And we literally had some people that said 10. Serious. So we went from, we were one of maybe two or three people that they were talking to, if they were even talking to anyone else, to now it was very normal to be them be talking with 5, 6, all the way up to literally one guy told us 10.
Wow.
Companies. And now you really had to know what you were doing. And we realized we were not strong in this area at all. So that's probably the biggest change we made, is we ended up building a system around sales and marketing, which we'd never really had before. I mean, I guess we bind it kind of by default did, but we'd never really thought about it as much as we started to after 08 and through. And that took, you know, that was not a 2-month thing. That was probably 2 years of really working on it, studying it, practicing, trying this, that didn't work, try that instead, all these things to actually finally come to a system where that we knew if we did these marketing things, customers would drop out the other end eventually, you know, at this point.
That's great. And I want to drill down into that. And also, you know, what you're touching on is really important, because I think what business owners don't often realize is that they already have systems. I mean, most of us have systems in our business. The problem is they may not be very good systems.
Right.
We may have repeat ways that we do things, but we're not necessarily getting the results that we think we want or should get, and don't know how to put that together to create consistent results. So I'd love to hear more about your, you know, how did you dissect that whole piece around, from the realization, okay, we're not salespeople. What did you start to put in place to have a better and a more successful sales and marketing funnel?
Well, it evolved over time, and it really started with just, we went out and got sales training. We said, okay, we need some help because this isn't working. So we went out and got sales training, and that was probably the first piece, because then we got better at the actual sale itself, you know, once we met the customer. And then from there, we started adding pieces about marketing, about how do we warm up the lead so that it, again, becomes our job to lose. You know, when they're so excited by the time we actually get out there and talk to them that they're just ready to go. You know, how do we do that? And it was just a constant learning, evolving, studying. I went out, and for the construction industry, this was unheard of at the time and still kind of unheard of for a lot of them. But I went out and started studying what people were doing in internet marketing, which is very progressive, cutting edge kind of stuff, and said, how can we take some of these ideas that people are doing online and use them in a brick and mortar business? And that separated us from a lot of people. I mean, because back in 08, 09, nobody, you know, if a construction company had a website, they were doing good, let alone doing videos and email and all these other pieces to the puzzle that were very common at the time in the internet world, but not so much in the kind of behind the times construction world.
That's interesting. So how did you come to be, to get comfortable with taking these innovative steps? Because I know coming from the legal industry, lawyers are also not, let's say, first adopters when it comes to a lot of the technological and internet advances.
Yeah, I think it's just my personality. I never wanted to be in construction. You know, it just kind of happened. So that wasn't really I wasn't the typical contracting business owner. I came from a different place. I had a business degree. I had worked in larger companies previously. And so I just came from a different place, whereas most people in that industry, they start out as a carpenter and become a business owner. And I started out with, I'm going to start a business. And yeah, we may have to do carpentry as part of it, but I didn't start from there. Mm-hmm. So I just came at it from a different perspective. And I've always been, I'm not super cutting edge adopting, but I'm out ahead of the pack for sure. But I'm not the first guy in. I'm not going to be the first one to jump in the water, but I'll be in the first dozen or so.
Okay.
I guess what really started it was in 07. I got my first iPhone, which sounds kind of like, where are you going with that? So I got my first iPhone in 07 and discovered podcasts and became a podcast junkie, because I lived an hour away from my office, as well as I was driving around a job site. So I had a good at least three hours of windshield time every day. And I just became a podcast junkie completely, and found a lot of, you know, I was interested about marketing because I'm trying to figure out how to market my business. So I listened to all these marketing podcasts, but most of them were around, you know, how do you use it on the internet? They were not about, at that time, were not about how do you use this in a real business. So that's probably, you know, that's where I started to pick up all the stuff. And I started to hear certain names over and over again on podcasts. And I said, oh, maybe I should go study that person and see what they're doing. And, oh, okay, now I get it. And I just got into this whole world of direct response marketing and how to use that online, and then applied that to how we use that in the business. And yeah.
Right. And because I was going to ask, what were some of those tactics that you started to implement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we came up with a system that every prospect went through. And we came up with a way to get them in the funnel at the beginning, you know, to get them to have somebody raise their hand and say, hey, I might be interested in remodeling my house. So we came up with a system, which was we would advertise a remodeling design guide. So it was a 20, 24 page color book of all these ideas you could do to your home. And it was very specific to our location, because where we were, most of the houses were all built in the 80s.
Okay.
The town exploded in the 1980s. So all the houses were pretty similar. So we had a book that was very much about that style of house and all the things we had done to these houses and things you could do and colors and fabrics and all the different things you could do. So we advertised that, and you know, people would say, hey, I'm interested. And we would mail them a design guide. And then from there, we could start to market to them about us more specifically. So we could use email to market to them. We could use direct mail because we got their physical address to send them the book.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so everybody went through this same process. And at some point, if they called us and said, hey, I want to talk to somebody about remodeling, well, then we had a whole system that kicked in at that point, which included a lot of information that they would get prior to us ever going out and meeting with them. So we were trying to educate people. So this is what really took our closing rate. Our closing rate was about 10% in 2009. And by the middle of 10, we had it to 25%.
Oh,
so
wow.
We had, you know, went from 1 in 10 to 1 in 4. So this whole system is really what did that, because it got the right people to call us. And then when they did call us, you know, now we educate them and make them a great customer before we ever even show up and have a conversation. So by the time we got there, a lot of the questions were answered. It was easier for us to get down to the real conversation, as opposed to we've got to start from zero. So all the pre-sales materials were designed to take us from zero to 60. And then when we got there, we only had to go from 60 to 100. As opposed to the old way, we were trying to go in 1 hour from zero to 100. And it just didn't happen. And we didn't make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So these materials evolved over time. You know, we tried different things, we added different things. But yeah, eventually we got it pretty well dialed into, you know, we know we're going to close 1 out of 4 when we go out to see them.
And did you also have systems for tracking, let's say, whether your the remodeling design guide is getting the kinds of responses over time? I mean, so how did you know what to tweak and what to leave and say, this is working?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of our efforts were after they contacted us, although we did track, you know, who got the guide, where they came from, you know, how they found out about us. And so we could see general trends over time where this lead source is better than that lead source.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely tracked all the lead sources and could see that, like, for instance, I know our number one lead source was internet leads. So they came in via the website, but that was far down the list when it came to actual closed sales. So it brought you a lot of volume, but it didn't necessarily bring a lot of customers. So there was a lot of filtering that had to happen if they came in through the internet. That was not somebody you were going to drop everything and run out and meet them that day. They needed a lot of education, a lot of filtering. And then by the time they actually called us, you know, hopefully we've weeded out a bunch of the people that were not our customer.
Okay. So that's where those interim education pieces came in to make sure.
Right.
Further qualifying and massaging.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because we were not the cheapest. We were probably one of the most expensive in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And so people that were price conscious or had a very small project, or, you know, we were trying to weed out, not to be rude, but just to weed out for time's sake. You know, I don't have time to talk to somebody that wants to just replace a sink, because that's not what I do. So I need to educate, because when people hear remodeler, that might mean many different things to many different people. So I have to educate them about what type of remodeler I was and say, this is what I do. And if you need that done, call me. If you don't, then I'm probably not the right guy for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. And it's also not a good use of the potential client's time if all they need is a sink remodeled and you're there preparing to remodel the entire house.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Not what they need either. So,
and our business model was set up that we were not going to be competitive to do a very small project like that. You know, that's not what we excelled at. So if that's the type of project you had, we tried to make that very obvious through the materials that this, don't call.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's other places. Here's some other resources if that's what you need.
Right. And that's interesting. Had you always been that targeted from the time of forming your business, or was this also something that came up as after the recession where you really had to hone in on how you were spending your time and who's going to be the right client?
I think we made some attempts at that prior to 2008, but it just, I think early on we would go to anything and everything. You know, when you start a company, man, the phone rings, you're there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do much filtering, and you kind of have that reek of desperation. But as time went on, you know, when we came up with a new business model after 2008, we didn't have the staff that would allow us to go running around chasing every single lead anymore. until we were pretty certain that that was going to be worth our time, because we rebuilt with a totally different business model on the back end as well, you know, about producing the product. We came back with a different model than we had prior to the recession. So that meant we were much more lean and mean, and we did not have the resources to spend, you know, every day chasing people who were not our customer.
Right. And talk a little more about that. How you saw said on the back end, had that model changed as well, not only bringing in people, but also how you serve them?
Well, prior to, in 08, when I had to lay off all my employees in like a 3-month time frame, went from, like I said, 8 to 1, it was very painful. Also made the classic business owner mistake that, hey, it's just around the corner. It's going to get better. If I just hold on another week, you know, the sales are going to come pouring in and I can't lay these people off because then the sales are going to come pouring in and I'm not going to have anybody to do the work.
Oh.
So just I held on far too long to people making up things for them to do just because I kept convincing myself that, oh, it's right around the corner. Because when you're in the middle of that, when it's all falling apart around you and you're in the middle of it, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you're optimistic. You have to be, or you shouldn't be in business.
Right.
So we got overly optimistic. Well, and we, by coincidence, we had ramped up our marketing in 08. That was the year we were going to really grow. So we had really kicked in our marketing in 08 and kept waiting for that to work. So, but it never did because everything went away. But we were convinced that, you know, we're putting all this effort into marketing. People are going to start showing up. Anyway, yeah, that was very painful to lay off all the employees. And so we said when we came back, I never want to do that again. And I don't want to be in the position where I'm making up stuff for people to do just to hold on for a week here and a week there. I don't want that anymore.
Right.
So we went to an all subcontracted model.
Oh.
We were all, well, I won't say all we did because that really discounts it, but all we did was we did design and we got the projects ready and we put them out to bid to a bunch of subcontractors and then we managed the project. We did not do any work anymore. Whereas prior to the recession, we did probably 50 to 75% of the work on the projects and subbed out only 25 to 50%. Whereas afterwards, we were doing maybe 10% and subbed out 90%.
Wow.
So it went to an all subcontracted model. And just found other people to do it. And that way we didn't have to worry about how the jobs lined up, moving our people from job to job and getting everything synchronized just right. I could have 5 jobs running at once or 1 job, wouldn't matter to me. I'm managing and organizing. And as long as I can handle the managing and organizing, which wasn't as difficult as actually doing, you know, trying to have the manpower to do the work.
Right.
Just worked better. So yeah, we came back with a completely different model.
Fascinating. And I'm assuming that that also brought in new systems that you were able to then document. And that's part of what made your company really attractive.
Yep. We had a whole system about how to, on the back end then, about how to produce a job as well. Yes. Yeah. We had very detailed, this is what happens. This doesn't happen until these things happen. And yeah.
So if you would just talk a little bit about that, because I know for many business owners, the idea of sitting down and documenting these systems, I mean, they'd rather have root canal without anesthesia.
So, yeah.
Is it really as painful as people make it out to be? Or, you know, once you're in the groove and you're able to see how things flow, it just comes out.
For me, it wasn't painful at all because I didn't do it. Yeah. I had, like I said, we went from 8 employees to 1. My one employee was my office manager. So it was my brother, myself, and my office manager. And we just went to her and said, we want you to start documenting all this stuff, everything you do, everything we do, and put her in charge of that.
Oh.
And of course, we had input to it, but she actually was the one that sat down and said, okay, this happens. And then we would meet and say, yep, that's right. Or no, what if I think we really do it this way, or we should do it that way. And over a period of months, she built a binder for the entire company, you know, while she wasn't working on other projects. That was kind of her background project. If there's nothing else going on, you know, work on systems. Or anytime you do something, write it down. because she was really kind of the central cog to everything. A lot of paperwork flowed through her, a lot of customers flowed through her. So, she really helped keep everything together. And we just said, here, help us document this. And she mostly did that. So for me, we just had to manage it. It wasn't painful at all. No, it wasn't too painful. Yeah, because she really managed that and really took that on. And it was great.
All right. And wonderful that you had someone in the organization who could take that on and did it so competently. So, so I know that you sold your business in 2013 and you've started a new business. So what are some of the lessons that you took from your remodeling business that you brought to the new one? Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, some of the lessons. Well, I guess what I do now is help people with this automation and systems and things. So I really took all those pieces I learned and the parts I really liked about the business. Cause like I said, I never set out to be in remodeling. And so but the remodeling company kind of opened my eyes to what I really do like to do, which is the marketing and advertising and sales systems and setting all that up. So I've taken all those lessons and used them to help other people. But as far as setting up my own business now, the other thing I just learned was I think I learned to slow down a little bit. Because part of the big downfall of 08 was all self-imposed. Like I said, the 08 was the year we dubbed Go Big or Go Home. And we pretty much went home in 08. It was pretty close.
Ouch.
Because we went too big and just, got too optimistic. And just, so I've learned to kind of slow down, more measured growth, not going to blow it up overnight. But grow slowly and then, have my own, even though it's very small at this point, have my own systems, start out from the beginning, thinking about how I do things. And as I bring in employees, how do I transition from me to them and not lose anything? How do we keep the same systems and level of quality and competency and service and all that? So I think the slowing down thing is probably the biggest part of that.
Right. And then they also give you an opportunity to see where things might not be working quite so well and have an opportunity to change them before you suddenly realize, wow, they're getting out of control.
Yeah. If I'd grown really fast, I've learned, what is it now? We're 3 years out. So I've learned more about what I like to do, what I'm good at. And so initially, if I'd really ramped up right out of the gate, I would have built a company that I hated because my initial thoughts turned out not to be anywhere close to what I'm at today. It's really morphed over the last 3 years, my niche customer, my product offerings, how I package it. I mean, all that has drastically changed in 3 years. So if I'd come right out of the gate and just said, I'm going to blow this up, it's going to be huge. I would have built the wrong thing and super miserable.
Can you give us an example of how it changed from beginning to where you are now?
Well, I'll tell you, honestly, the first thing I wanted to do, I made the classic mistake that everybody says is follow your passion, take your passion and turn it into a business. And so I said, that's what I'm going to do. This is my kind of second coming. I'm going to do what I really want to do. I kind of fell into remodeling. I'm going to purposely go out and do what I really want to do. And that was music. And so I wanted to help musicians market and do all the things I talked about, except for the niche of music. And I beat my head against the wall for a good 14 months trying to do that until I realized my heart's not in this. Even though I love music, I am not into this. This is not working. I do not like working with these people.
Oh,
nothing against them, but they're just not, I'm not wired that way. They're wired very differently than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in the world of small business for so many years that my brain works in small business. Their brain works in creativity and art. And those are two very different things. And I just was constantly frustrated because they didn't see a need to do what I do. Even the people that hired me were very resistant to do anything.
Hmm.
So I was just constantly frustrated. And then one day I finally said, this is not working. This is not working. So what do I like? You know, I got to do something else because this is not going to sustain itself. So I looked around and said, well, I really like small business people. And I know that world. I'm good at that world. So I started pursuing a couple small, I joined the local chamber, just went to a couple meetings. And within a week, I had a customer. And that customer was paying me more than probably five music customers combined.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And when I sat down with them, they were excited about what I was talking about. And they were really wanted to do it. And they just, and I went, wow, this feels so much better. Feels so much better. And right. Within a month, hey, music, sorry, guys, I'm not doing that anymore. Now I help businesses. I help small businesses. And so that was the biggest thing. And that was kind of shocking because I, for years, had said, I want to be in music. When I graduated college, that's what I wanted to do. And I ended up in remodeling instead. I wanted to be in the music business. And so I said, I'm going to do it. You know, who says I can't?
Right.
And turns out I didn't do it for a reason because I just don't fit in that world. I just don't think that way.
Yep, not what you thought it was going to be. Well,
not
Neil, you've given us a lot of great insights. Just and also appreciate your candor and realizing where your strengths were not in that first business. Because as business owners, we can often think, well, I can or I have to be able to do everything myself. But also seeing how putting in the right systems and automation around it can actually help support us as we're learning to develop those new skills and learning to really work with the audiences that
right.
we enjoy and that also pay us handsomely.
Yes.
So thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, you're welcome.
And thank you for tuning in and listening to Cash Out Big. Are you ready to have your service business generate real wealth, real freedom, and a real legacy? Then make sure you're on our list to get our executive summary. Go to businessexponential.com. These are the top tips from each episode you can put into action right away. A summary of the highlights you've just heard. And if you need to listen in at a later time, you can at least see and read real quickly what we're doing and get the highlights. Just go to businessexponential.com and get signed up. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cash Out Big.